Chapter 13. The disappearing lake. We had an early breakfast in the morning, and sat looking down on the desert, and the weather was ever so balmy and lovely, although we weren't high up. You have to come down lower and lower after sundown in the desert, because it cools off so fast. And so, by the time it is getting toward dawn, you are skimming along only a little ways above the sand. We was watching the shadow of the balloon slide along the ground, and now and then gazing off across the desert to see if anything was stirring, and then down on the shadow again, when all of a sudden almost right under us, we see a lot of men and camels laying scattered about, perfectly quiet, like they was asleep. We shut off the power, and backed up and stood over them, and then we see that they was all dead. It give us the cold shivers. And it made us hush down too, and talk low, like people at a funeral. We dropped down slow and stopped, and me and Tom clumb down, and went among them. There was men, and women, and children. They was dried by the sun and dark and shriveled and leathery, like the pictures of mummies you see in books. And yet they looked just as human, you wouldn't they believed it, just like they was asleep. Some of the people and animals was partly covered with sand, but most of them not, for the sand was thin there, and the bed was gravel and hard. Most of the clothes had rotted away, and when you took hold of a rag, it tore with a touch, like spider-web. Tom reckoned they had been laying there for years. Some of the men had rusty guns by them, some had swords on, and had shawl belts with long, silver-mounted pistols stuck in them. All the camels had their loads on yet, but the packs had busted or rotted, and spilt the freight out on the ground. We didn't reckon the swords was any good to the dead people anymore, so we took one apiece, and some pistols. We took a small box too, because it was so handsome, and inlet so fine. And then we wanted to bury the people, but there weren't no way to do it that we could think of, and nothing to do it with but sand, and that would blow away again, of course. Then we mounted high and sailed away, and pretty soon that black spot on the sand was out of sight, and we wouldn't ever see them poor people again in this world. We wondered, and reasoned, and tried to guess how they come to be there, and how it all happened to them, but we couldn't make it out. First we thought maybe they got lost, and wandered around and about till their food and water give out, and they starved to death. But Tom said no wild animals, nor vultures hadn't meddled with them, and so that guess wouldn't do. So at last we give it up, and judged we wouldn't think about it no more, because it made us low-spirited. Then we opened the box, and it had gems and jewels in it, quite a pile, and some little veils of the kind the dead women had on, with fringes made out of curious gold money that we weren't acquainted with. We wondered if we better go, and try to find them again, and give it back. But Tom thought it over and said no, it was a country that was full of robbers, and they would come and steal it, and then the sin would be on us for putting the temptation in their way. So we went on, but I wished we had took all they had, so there wouldn't they been no temptation at all left. We had had 2 hours of that blazing weather down there, and was dreadful thirsty when we got aboard again. We went straight for the water, but it was spoiled and bitter, besides being pretty near hot enough to scald your mouth. We couldn't drink it. It was Mississippi River water, the best in the world, and we stirred up the mud in it to see if that would help, but no, the mud wasn't any better than the water. Well, we hadn't been so very, very thirsty before, while we was interested in the lost people, but we was now, and as soon as we found we couldn't have a drink, we was more than 35 times as thirsty as we was a quarter of a minute before. Why, in a little while we wanted to hold our mouths open and pant like a dog. Tom said to keep a sharp lookout, all around, everywheres, because we'd got to find an oasis, or there weren't no telling what would happen. So we done it. We kept the glasses gliding around all the time, till our arms got so tired we couldn't hold them anymore. 2 hours, 3 hours, just gazing and gazing, and nothing but sand, 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 and you could see the quivering heat shimmer playing over it. Dear, dear, a body don't know what real misery is till he is thirsty all the way through, and a certain he ain't ever going to come to any water anymore. At last I couldn't stand it to look around on them baking plains. I laid down on the locker and give it up. But by and by Tom raised a whoop, and there she was. A lake, white and shiny, with palm trees leaning over it asleep, and their shadows in the water just as soft and delicate as ever you see. I never see anything look so good. It was a long ways off, but that weren't anything to us. We just slept on a 100-mile gate, and calculated to be there in 7 minutes. But she stayed the same old distance away, all the time. We couldn't seem to gain on her. Yes, sir, just as far, and shiny, and like a dream. But we couldn't get no nearer, and at last, all of a sudden, she was gone. Tom's eyes took a spread, and he says, "Boys, it was a mirage." Said it like he was glad. I didn't see nothing to be glad about. I says, "Maybe. I don't care nothing about its name, the thing I want to know is, what's become of it?" Jim was trembling all over, and so scared he couldn't speak, but he wanted to ask that question himself, if he could a done it. Tom says, "What's become of it? Why, you see yourself it's gone." "Yes, I know, but where's it gone to?" He looked me over and says, "Well now, Huck Finn, where would it go to? Don't you know what a mirage is?" "No, I don't. What is it?" "It ain't anything but imagination. There ain't anything to it." It warmed me up a little to hear him talk like that, and I says, "What's the use you talking, that kind of stuff, Tom Sawyer? Didn't I see the lake?" "Yes, you think you did." "I don't think nothing about it. I did see it." "I tell you you didn't see it either, because it weren't there to see." It astonished Jim to hear him talk so, and he broke in and says, kind of pleading and distressed, "Mars Tom, please don't say sich things in sich an awful time as this. You ain't only reskin your own self, but you's reskin us same way like Ananias and Sifra. The lake was da, I seen it just as plain as I sees you and Huck this minute." I says, "Why, he seen it himself. He was the very one that seen it first. Now then." "Yes, Mars Tom, it's so you can't deny it. We all seen it, and that prove it was da."
"Proves it?
How does it prove it?" "Same way it does in the courts and everywheres, Mars Tom. One person might be drunk, or dreamy or sudden, and he could be mistaken. And two might, maybe. But I tell you, saw, when three sees a thing, drunk or sober, it's so. They ain't no getting around that, and you knows it, Mars Tom." "I don't know nothing of the kind. There used to be 40,000 million people that seen the sun move from one side of the sky to the other every day. Did that prove that the sun done it?" "Course it did. And besides, they weren't no occasion to prove it. A body that's got any sense ain't gwine to doubt it. Da she is now a sailing through the sky, like she lays done."
Tom turned on me then, and says, "What do you say is the sun standing still?"
"Tom Sawyer, what's the use to ask such a jackass question? Anybody that ain't blind can see it don't stand still."
"Well," he says, "I'm lost in the sky with no company but a passel of low-down animals that don't know no more than the head boss of a university did 300 or 400 years ago. It weren't fair play, and I let him know it." I says, "Throw in mud ain't arguing, Tom Sawyer."
"Oh, my goodness, oh, my goodness gracious, da's the lake agin," yelled Jim, just then.
"Now, Mars Tom, what you gwine to say?"
"Yes, sir, there was the lake again, away yonder across the desert, perfectly plain, trees and all, just the same as it was before." I says, "I reckon you're satisfied now, Tom Sawyer."
But he says, perfectly calm,
"Yes, satisfied there ain't no lake there."
Jim says, "Don't talk so, Mars Tom, it scares me to hear you. It's so hot, and you so thirsty, that you ain't in your right mind, Mars Tom. Oh, but don't she look good? Claw, I don't know how I's gwine to wait till we get star, I so thirsty. Well, you'll have to wait, and it won't do you no good either, because there ain't no lake there, I tell you. I says, Jim, don't you take your eye off of it, and I won't either. Deed I won't, and bless you, honey, I couldn't if I wanted to. We went a-tearing along toward it, piling the miles behind us like nothing, but never gaining an inch on it, and all of a sudden it was gone again. Jim staggered, and most fell down. When he got his breath he says, gasping like a fish, Mars Tom, it's a goes, that's what it is, and I hopes to goodness we ain't gwine to see it no mo'. Day's been a lake, and soothin's happened, and the lake's dead, and we seen its goes. We seen it twice, and that's proof. The desert's haunted, it's haunted, show. Oh, Mars Tom, let's get out in it. I'd rather die than have the night catch us in the agon and the gozer that lake come a-murnin' around us and we asleep and don't know the danger we's in. Ghost, you gander. It ain't anything but air and heat and thirstiness pasted together by a person's imagination. If I give the glass. He grabbed it and begun to gaze off to the right. It's a flock of birds, he says. It's getting toward sundown, and they're making a beeline across our track for somewheres. They mean business, maybe they're going for food or water, or both. Let her go to starboard. Port your helm. Hard down. There, ease up steady, as you go. We shut down some of the power, so as not to outspeed them, and took out after them. We went skim-dashing along a quarter of a mile behind them, and when we had followed them an hour and a half, and was getting pretty discouraged, and was thirsty clean to unendurableness, Tom says, take the glass, one of you, and see what that is, away ahead of the birds. Jim got the first glimpse, and slumped down on the locker sick. He was most crying, and says, she's diagon, Mars Tom, she's diagon, and I knows I's gwine to die, case when a body sees a ghost the third time, that's what it means. I wished I'd never come in this balloon, that I does. He wouldn't look no more, and what he said, made me afraid to, because I knowed it was true, for that has always been the way with ghosts, so then I wouldn't look any more either. Both of us begged Tom to turn off, and go some other way, but he wouldn't, and said we was ignorant superstitious. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.